You hear that song, you know what time it is, ladies and gentlemen. Time for the Project 223 podcast. Welcome. This is Brent, the Bald Eagle, and we are at the Eagle's Nest in studio, ready to bring you some knowledge, some information that will help you be ready should disaster or emergency strike. On the Project 223 podcast today, we're going to talk about basic personal and family preparedness. This is part two in our series going through the group preparedness plan. We're in part one, section one, talking about personal gear. So last week we went over items one and two, utility mission gear and security mission gear, low profile. Today we are going to hit on everybody's favorite. This is one of the most popular topics out there. When you talk about preparedness, everybody loves a good bug out bag. This is our 3-day emergency bag, also known as the bug out bag or a 72-hour emergency kit. Goes by a lot of different names, but basically it's got one thing going. It has enough gear inside it to help you survive for 3 days without outside help. So that means it's giving you water, food, shelter, security, things that you're going to need in case of disaster. This bag you can grab and go, and it's got the gear you need. So we're going to talk about that today. First off, as we start, usually we talk about the mission of the Project 223 is to help everyday citizens become prepared to survive in times of trouble. Survival means nothing without inner peace. Knowing why you're here on this earth and where you're going, the true meaning of life. God the Father holds the universe in his hand, and he created you and me so that he could show us his goodness and love. The ultimate preparedness you can make is to get to know him by reading his word, the Bible. And that's where we get the title and the mission for this podcast. Proverbs 22:3 says, "The wise man sees trouble and prepares, but the fool keeps going and suffers." We don't want you to be a fool. We want you to be wise. So that's what we do. We spend time gaining knowledge, skills, and gear to prepare for possible troubles that may come. This allows us to live our life in peace and comfort, knowing we're ready as possible to help our families and our neighbors in good times and in bad. So today in our preparedness journey, let's get to it. The bug out bag. All right, you're going to want to take some notes today because we're going to have a lot of good information coming at you. Now, you can look up 101 different videos on YouTube University about bug out bags. Today, you're going to get the Bald Eagle's perspective on some of these things. So, I may have a little different thing. I like to take a lot of knowledge from a lot of different sources, gather information, and put together my own gear and equipment that meets my needs. So hopefully this will have some information that you may not have heard before from a different point of view. We're coming at you from the point of view of the God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot who not only wants to survive, but also wants to thrive and live a way that is a healthy, strong way, maintain a standard of living through tough times. So we want to make sure you get the gear you need to take care of yourself and your family. All right, so the first thing we're going to talk about, obviously, you need a good pack, okay? And so different people have different mindsets when it comes to the type of pack that they use. It used to be that everybody just said, hey, you just have a big backpack and you throw all your gear in there. But recently I watched somebody on YouTube that talked about the fact that for them, they were going to do more of a system where they had bins, and these different bins had the gear they needed in it. And depending on the situation, if they were in their car, they're going to throw different bins of gear into the vehicle. I like that idea because think about it. You got that one bag that you're going to grab, but maybe you have room for a little more stuff. So I like to suggest that you do is minimum, you start out with a good rugged backpack. And you don't want this to be too big because it's important that you're able to carry this. Think about your situation where you live and what kind of mobility you would have in a disaster. Where I'm at, we have the Puget Sound region. I-5 runs north and south. We have a mountain range, the Cascades. I'm looking right out the window, and I can see the beautiful mountains out there. Now, there's very limited access across those mountains. You have Stevens Pass. You have I-90, Snoqualmie Pass. There's a few more highways as you head north, but there is very limited access out of this region to the east. To the west, we have the peninsula, but you also have the Puget Sound. So with that water there, you're somewhat limited in your transportation modes. And so then we don't want to go south because that's Seattle. So we're going to stay out of that direction. So that leaves us maybe north or east with very limited ways to go. On a regular rush hour of traffic, I'll be driving down onto the freeway. And the other day I was sitting on the on-ramp at a dead stop with all lanes of traffic full just because one person does something stupid and gets in a wreck. So can you imagine if something actually really bad was happening? The amount of traffic that's going to be on the roads, it's going to be very difficult for you to get anywhere in a vehicle. So you need to be thinking about that and have a pace plan for transportation, right? We have our primary, which maybe is our vehicle, but then what's your alternate modes? What do you do for contingency or in an emergency? And so this three-day bag, if you have a backpack that's very comfortable that you can throw over your shoulders, that's not too heavy, then you could go on foot and you could get a long ways on foot with that gear. So be thinking about that. Make sure that it's not too heavy, and that's important for us. And I like to fill it with different items that have multi-purpose uses to them. So something like a military-style army poncho can work as rain gear for yourself, but you can also build a shelter out of that. A stainless steel water bottle, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes. You can carry water with it and drink out of it, but you can also boil water in it. So try to find as many items as you can that have multiple uses to keep down on the weight. And then I like to suggest that everybody in your family has their own bag. Even if it's a young child, just give them a smaller bag with lightweight things in there so that they can feel like they're part of the team, part of the group carrying their own bag, and they can have comfort items in their bag that will help them be happy should there be a troubled time, whether it's some kind of a emergency that you're dealing with as a family. You want to help your family be comfortable during those times. So put some type of comfort items, maybe their favorite toy, an extra blankie or something in their bag that's not too heavy. And then you may split up some of your community items that your family is carrying. So maybe you have some type of stove and some extra fuel and some food. Well, rather than putting that all in one pack, you might put, if you have a teenager or younger kids, you give them a little bit of the food and you spread it out between multiple people. So community items will be spread out in different bags. That's one option. So we're talking about our backpack, comfortable shoulder and waist straps, not too heavy. Durable materials and zippers. It's nice to have lots of pockets to organize your gear. And you don't necessarily want to get something that looks too tactical in your backpack. If you had a pack that looked like you were a Navy SEAL or Green Beret, when you're walking along, people might think, hey, that guy might have extra cool gear or stuff that I might want to take from them. So looking a little more like the gray man in this situation is important. I suggest a backpack in muted colors, earth tones, and you can get backpacking gear that's similar to what you'd get at REI. That's a perfect type of a thing, especially if your area is like the Northwest here where people do a lot of outdoorsy stuff. If you've got an REI backpack, you're going to fit right in. You don't want to stand out. And when I say gray man, that's the concept to where you want to blend in with the people around you. If you're in an area where people wear camouflage because there's a lot of hunters, well, then you would fit right in some mossy oak camouflage. But if you're in an area where that's unusual, then you don't want to stand out. If you look too rich or stocked up, that can also make you a target as well. So don't necessarily go out and buy the fanciest gear you can get. Keep your stuff a little more humble, and so you do not look like too big of a target. So we talked about the pack. A decent-sized rugged pack, and you don't need to spend a lot of money to do this either. A lot of people think that preparedness is outside of their reach because they can't afford the items. Well, for your kids, this pack, they're probably not going to be using it very often. Get the backpack they used for school last year that's now out of style and a little worn, and it's sitting in your closet. They're not going to wear it again. Take that pack and turn that into their bag. And then you can use some of the clothes that they don't wear, that's not their favorites. stuff that's a little out of style, or maybe they got a new pair of shoes for school this year, take that old pair of running shoes and put them in that bag, and that can be their comfortable shoes. So be smart about the way we do this. Next, we go down important things, and we like to think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the important stuff you need to survive: water, food, shelter, security. Those are the things we want to hit on in our bug out bag. So second of all is water. It's very important to have enough water to keep yourself hydrated. They say that about 1/2 to a gallon per day minimum just for drinking, but you're going to probably need a little more than that. But remember, this is only a 3-day bag. It's to get us through a short period of time. So we could go with a little less and still survive. So about 1/2 to a gallon of water per day per person. So you need means to collect, to purify, and also to carry water. So when we talk about collecting water, this might even be water that's not quite drinkable yet. So if you're using something to carry it to an area where you're safe, and then you're going to purify it. So that might be something to think about. So this would be like, could be a water bottle, a cup, or some type of a plastic pouch. They make collapsible pouches that you can carry water in. And so I have one of those I'm looking at right here. It's Nalgene brand. It's got the lid, just like a regular Nalgene bottle, but it's plastic and clear, and it folds flat when it's empty. But when it's full, it can carry up to 96 ounces of water. So it's a pretty cool system. Next, you need to make sure you can purify that water. So if you're getting water that's not, you're not sure about the cleanliness, if it's potable or not, then you need some methods. So there's different ways to do that: tablets, chlorine, chlorine dioxide, or iodine. You can also boil the water using your jet boil stove, a fire, an Esbit solid fuel stove. And when you boil water to purify it, you want to boil it for a good 1 minute in a rolling boil, and then you let it cool before you drink it. Also, there's the Life Straw filters or the Sawyer Mini. So there's lots of different kind out there. There's two different ways that you can make water good for drinking. There's purifying and there's filtering. And there's a difference there. A filter will get out up to 0.2 microns of contamination there. So that'll take care of your Giardia and the Cryptosporidium and the things that you're normally going to be worried about drinking water that's in a backcountry stream. Now, if you live in an area that may have virus issues, and that'd be third world countries or some areas where there's not good sanitation, then you need to purify your water. And purifying is what removes the viruses. And those are down to 0.02 microns. They actually make some purifying filters nowadays. They're a lot more money, but they're pretty cool. They go down to a lot smaller purification levels. So that's pretty cool if you can afford that. But another way that you can make sure and purify it is using your tablets, and also using the a boiling method works pretty well too. So two ways. And then to carry the water. So the collapsible bladder, like I talked about, is pretty good. Your stainless steel water bottle. Now, I like to suggest using single wall stainless steel bottles. That way you can use them to boil the water. You can just put the water right on the fire in the container it's in, and you can let it boil in there. So that's gives you dual options for that use. If you have a little titanium nesting cup that fits in your container where the water bottle will sit in, that's also kind of nice too. So where you can make tea or coffee in your little in your cup, so it's nice to have a cup. Camelbacks are another way to carry water. A new system that I've started using is the MSR, Mountain Safety Research Dromedary Bag. So this is a collapsible bag that holds 10 liters of water, and it's a two-part system. So it has a dirty water bag and a clean water bag, and then it has the filter between them. So if you're traveling and you go to collect water down at the river, but you don't want to stay in that area because where are people going to look for people to take advantage of is near a water source, right? So you want to get in, get your water, and get out of there. So you take the dirty water bag, and it's open at the top. You come down one big scoop, and you can fill that whole bag. Then you roll it and cinch it with a dry sack type closure, and you carry that bag to a safe location, back to camp. Now you can hang that bag from a tree, and gravity feed through the filter into your dromedary bag, the 10-liter bag. So now your dirty water filters down while you're doing other stuff in camp, and you don't have to sit and wait for it by the river. So that's a pretty cool system that I've enjoyed using, and it works real well. Next on our list, we've had backpacking, the backpack. We have our water supply, and now we're going to talk about shelter. You need something to sleep under, sleep on, and sleep in. It's important. So one thing you can use to sleep under would be some type of poncho or tarp to make a shelter. There's lots of different videos, and you Google how to build a tarp shelter. There's all kinds of great ways to do that. And what I like the system is using what they call the rapid ridge line. And so it's a piece of paracord line that has a couple small prusiks on there, and you can wrap it around a tree, and using a toggle or a tent peg, you can put together your rapid ridge line and cinch it down into a real tight line that you can use to build a shelter with very quickly. And it also breaks down very quickly. So I watched a video by the gray-bearded Green Beret. He's got some cool videos on the rapid ridge line, so you can look him up and see how to put one of those together. But they work really well. Put one of those ridge lines across, string a poncho or a tarp over it, and now you've got some shelter. Tents are also an option, but they have limitations. So they can be big and heavy. And so it's kind of hard if you're trying to keep your bug out bag at a minimum size. A tent might not be a easy thing to carry. Depends on who's in your party and how far you need to go. We also want to keep a low profile when we're sleeping. So by having a big tent set up, something that people can see, gives you people a false sense of security being inside a tent. They feel kind of safer inside there. But really, all you are doing is keeping yourself from being able to see any danger coming at you. So tents are a tricky one. I understand what it's like. It's hard to sleep out in the open at night. But when we're moving and resting, we want to think about the acronym BLISS. And that stands for blend, keep a low silhouette, irregular shape, small, and secluded. So those are some things to remember when you're setting up an area to sleep when you're on the move. Something to sleep on. So depending on your environment, whether it's hot or cold, you could use a ground tarp. So they call the casualty blankets. There's a tarp that has, it's green on one side, and it's got the Mylar reflective material on the other side with grommets in the corners. And those casualty blanket emergency tarps are real nice. You can put them up with the reflective side toward you to reflect heat back in, or if you're using it, you can have the green side up if you're trying to hide. And so if you take a ground tarp on the ground, and then you have a bivy sack filled with pine boughs or a sleeping pad, those would be nice things that you could be having underneath you to sleep on. So in a bivy sack, that's just a material bag made out of like a Gore-Tex or a nylon that's kind of like a miniature tent. It's almost like a cocoon that you can get into. They use them in mountaineering and solo camping. It's just enough, big enough for one person to get inside. And they're water resistant to keep the water off of you while you're sleeping. Or a regular old inflatable sleeping pad, those work nice as well. And something to sleep in. So that bivy sack is one item. You could get the emergency bivvies. Just be aware that if you take one of the Mylar style emergency bivvies, a friend of mine did one, we did an overnight training, and he got inside that Mylar bivy sack and his breath and moisture ended up being soaked by the next morning because those things do not breathe. So if you get moisture inside that bag and you get wet, now you're going to get cold. So just be aware that you want to make sure that whatever you're sleeping in is breathable enough to let your perspiration out, but keep the rain and the moisture off of you. They have what they call the Ranger Taco, and that's what the military guys would use. In the field, they would take their Wooby, which is a quilted blanket that's designed to mesh with the USGI poncho, military poncho, and they could take that and it would snap in and tie in, and they could make a little sleeping bag out of their poncho and the Wooby. So that's something kind of cool to option for you out there. Okay, so next, so we've hit on the pack, water supply, and shelter. Number four is our fire kit. Fire is very important for a lot of reasons. You got to think about the scenario that we're in. We always want to think about our threat model and use case, right? What's the threat we're facing and what's the use of what we're doing at the time? So are we in a permissive or non-permissive environment? And that means that a permissive environment is you're able to do things like build a fire, have a tent, you're relatively safe. But if you're on the run, if you're being chased or you're in a dangerous situation, that's what we'd call a non-permissive environment. So in non-permissive environments, fires might not be a very good option because the smoke and the light may draw unwanted attention. So be thinking about that. The members should be able to start a fire with a fire kit in adverse conditions. So no security threats, we're in a permissive environment, the chance of being found is not an issue, then the fire is okay. So in a fire kit, you want to have multiple ignition sources, fire starter products, and a method to produce tinder. Fire can be used for water, cooking, heat, and comfort. It's important to have redundant methods, so I like to suggest that people have modern means, like the Bic lighter, fail-safe backups, and also primitive skills and tools. So, as I said, the modern means would be something like a lighter or storm matches. They make the strike anywhere storm matches that light and stay lit for like 15, 20 seconds. Those are great modern means of lighting fire. What's a fail-safe backup? You've all seen the ferro rod that people like to use where you take a carbon steel striker and you can draw sparks off the ferricium rod. So those are a great way to make sparks for a fire. A Fresnel lens, which is basically like a magnifying glass. So if you have sun, the problem with the Fresnel lens is usually you need the weather that you don't need a fire. So it's sunny out so that's not necessarily the best option, but it is one option. Fire starter products like Quickfire, or that's a commercially made product, or Vaseline impregnated cotton balls. That's a cheap way. You just take a cotton ball, dip it in some Vaseline, take four or five of those, put it in a baggie, and those make a real great fire starter. You could also use fat wood, which is a naturally occurring type of wood found in downed trees. You could use lint from your belly button or your dryer. Collect that dryer lint and store it up in a little Ziploc bag in your bug out bag. Magnesium shavings. You can even take, I keep a pencil sharpener in my fire kit, a little small old school one, and you can take twigs or even just a pencil, and by shaving the shavings off, you can make small tinder to start a fire. So that's a great little trick. And then there's primitive means, things like a flint and steel or a bow drill or using a charring tin. So those are all different skills that you can look up how to do those things. But by knowing some of these different methods, you're going to have a great, robust plan to survive. Next on our list is clothing. So we want to have some extra clothing to protect us from the elements, maintain morale, and to be able to sleep in to keep warm. So the waterproof poncho that we talked about earlier is a treated ripstop nylon, and those work great. There's brands that make them out there. You can get the Army issue type or brands like Helicon Tex, Military Surplus. There's lots of stuff out there. Also, I'd like to keep some long sleeve shirt and pants, some good wool socks, a fleece beanie, some sturdy shoes and boots, because you're going to be walking and carrying your pack, so you want to prevent injury and allow you to fight. So we don't want to be walking in flip-flops when we're bugging out. So by having these extra items in there, if you happen to get wet or if you're caught unprepared to move, you have those items in your bag and ready to go for you. So by having extra things like a couple pairs of underwear, maybe a t-shirt or two, and some gloves, those things will be very helpful to you when it gets cold out or if you get a little wet. Putting on some fresh socks or a nice fresh t-shirt after sweating during the day, it's going to be really good for your morale. And also, your clothing is considered part of your sleep system. So by having lightweight insulating layers, fleece or wool, that's going to stay warm when wet, that'll help you stay warm in your sleeping bag because you're going to have minimum minimum amount of insulation, like because you're having to carry it all. Using technical fabric long underwear is moisture wicking, and that really helps as well. All right, moving on from clothes, we're on number six line. You want to make sure you have some medical gear. So there's three types of kits that we talk about in our training. Is the IFAC, the individual first aid kit, having a boo-boo kit, and then having advanced care medical gear. So the IFAC is our individual first aid kit, and that's designed to save your own life. Now, if you're ever doing any kind of operations where you have to carry a firearm, then it's good to have an individual first aid kit, because if you're putting bullets downrange, that means that they very possibly are coming back towards you. And so if you happen to get some type of injury where you get shot or somebody you're with gets shot, being able to apply a tourniquet, a chest seal, or something like that to be able to help them is very important. So having an individual first aid kit. And then the boo-boo kit is more of a smaller items for minor injuries or illnesses. So things like the Band-Aids, blister pads, and medications like ibuprofen, Tylenol, and Benadryl. Important to have those type of things. Also, you want to have tweezers and scissors in there. So that's important to have in the boo-boo kit. And then your extended care medical kit. So this is going to be, you may have one of these per family. And this is going to have things like a splint kit, maybe some suture materials, some expanded medications. And so this all depends on your level of training as well. But the extended care kit is important to have for those extra items. Next, navigation. So there's a couple questions that you're going to have to be able to answer, and that's, where am I and where am I going? So it's important to be able to know those answers. So GPS is one where a lot of people are dependent on. You also need to know how to use a map and compass. And then I would also suggest that you get yourself some pace count beads. And these are also called ranger beads. And those will help you figure out how far you've walked. So it's important to have, what I like to keep is a map of my local area that I'm in and where I travel. And so having that in your bag is important. The pace count beads, what those are is that as you walk, you put together your pace count beads, and there's four on top, small, and then there's nine on the bottom. And the way that works is you figure out how many paces that you walk to walk 100 yards. So if you want to say do it in yards or meters, you can make your choice. But figure out how many paces it is for you to walk 100. Let's use meters, 100 meters. So we know 1,600 meters is a mile. So if we figure out that I walk 130 steps, then that way I can keep track as I'm walking. Every time I walk my 130 steps, I pull down one bead. And then I pull down the second bead. When I get to the ninth bead, then I pull down a top bead, and that stands for 10. So that means I know I've walked 1,000 meters. And so that way you can keep track of your, and that actually goes to 5,000 meters, which is 3.2 miles. And so you can keep track of your distance that you've traveled, and then use that to verify against your map where you are, where you should be. Another part of navigation that I have is signaling devices. And this would be something where you're signaling that you need help. I kind of threw it in under the navigation section. But signaling devices are important. Now, you may be in a permissive environment and you're just lost in the woods, or you need help. And so there's emergency services around. So you need to be able to get a signal off. So there's different kinds. There's visual signals. And these would be things like an emergency strobe light, a signal mirror, or VS-17 panel. Signal mirrors are great. They're used by many people. There's been a lot of rescues with signal mirrors, and it's just a small, you know, maybe about a 2x3-inch mirror that you can use as a reflective surface to signal somebody by reflecting the sun's rays or even flashlights or spotlights. So signal mirrors are a great way to make yourself seen in an emergency. A VS-17 panel is a two-shaded, highly visible nylon panel. It's made out of, it's just nylon cloth material. And one side is a very hot fluorescent pink, and the other side is fluorescent orange. And so these are used by military people a lot for visual signaling. So it's good to have one of those in your pack to make yourself seen. in a small emergency light with a strobe on it could really do well to help you in a nighttime situation. Also, signaling devices, there's audible signals such as a whistle. Those are good. Whistles are cheap and easy. Have one of those attached to your pack strap. It's an easy way to go. And then if you get super fancy and you've got the finances to do it, a personal locator beacon or PLB, those are a fancy way to get help. They send a signal up to the satellites, and then there's people that monitor those signals, and you can get out your information. So also things like the Garmin inReach have SOS features that use satellite locations. So things to be aware of. A little more on the expensive side, but if you've got the dollars and you want to go for it, it's a good way to go. Next section is going to be section 8, personal hygiene. It's very important for your health, but it's also good for morale to stay clean and to not let yourself get too grungy. So oral hygiene is very important. Having a toothbrush and floss and picks would be very good to keep yourself clean and keep you from having some type of a toothache. Remember, we're only going to be gone for a few days, but how much better would it be to be able to get that piece of food out of your teeth that's hurting, or just to brush your teeth at night just to make you feel a little bit better when you're going through a tough situation. And personal cleanliness, using cleansing wipes or a compact chamois towel, that's a nice thing to have in your pack. They make the camp towels. So have one of those, some multi-purpose soap. I like the moistened disposable towelettes to use. They can help clean your underarms. You can double those as TP, so those will keep you nice and clean as well, keep you from getting the monkey butt. Some other items in our personal hygiene kit is going to be things like chapstick, some sunscreen wipes, and some toilet paper. And for the toilet paper, if you remove the roll out of the inside of it, you can kind of squeeze it down small. They also make commercially packaged small rolls of toilet paper specifically for things like that. So they also have a really cool item that I've purchased, and you can get these on Amazon. They're little dehydrated cloth towels, and it looks like a lifesaver. It's a very small little white tablet, but when you put a few drops of moisture on it, it becomes a towel that's maybe about a foot by a foot. And those are kind of nice. So you can throw those in a really small space, and they come in real handy. Our next section is section 9. And this is electronics. So some things you'd want to have in your bug out bag, electronics wise. How about a cell phone charging cord? Make sure that you've got an extra one in there. And then depending on what kind you have, whether you need the micro USB or the Apple, make sure you got the right one. And then a battery bank with solar panels. So what I have this really cool little battery bank that actually has an Apple cord and a micro USB cord that pulls down off of there. So you can, and it plugs right in. So you could plug that in and it charges. You can also plug it into solar panels and keep it charged. So it's kind of nice to have a small pair of solar panels in case you did get caught out for a longer period of time and you needed to charge some electronics. Might not be a bad idea. And then two-way radios. We talk quite a bit, Project 223, about knowing how to use two-way radios. So these would be the VHF, UHF, or GMRS style. And having a field antenna is an extra bonus there, one that you can throw up in the tree, pull up in the tree, and have a 20-foot high antenna to be able to get out and reach out for help. So important to have a two-way radio. Maybe even the solar-powered hand crank emergency radios. I haven't had the best luck with those, but they're not too expensive. And if you had one in there for a worst case scenario, it just might be something that helped you out. And then I would also have some extra batteries. I like the lithium style batteries for my electronic devices. They're just a higher quality battery. And if your life's depending on it, you want to get the best you can. All right, so that's it for electronics section. Let's move on to lighting. This is section 10. Lighting is a very important tool for you to have, and you should have multiple sources. Remember, two is one is none. I like to always have at least three sources of lighting when I'm in a situation like that. Having some extra batteries is important. So I like to store them outside of the actual flashlight. How many of you have went to use a flashlight that you haven't used in a while and found a nice corroded chunk of battery inside there and the light not working? that's one of the most frustrating things to me. So I like to have my nice lithium batteries in a dedicated little container. You can buy containers that store like four or five batteries. It looks like a little magazine for these batteries. And I keep those out of the actual headlamp or flashlight and just keep it in a baggie near there so that it's ready to go. You may have a solar charger for those as well. That same one that you had earlier in the electronics is important. And then I like to have hands-free options for my lighting, because if I'm doing work and it's dark, I don't want to have to be holding onto a flashlight. So headlamps work great for that, or portable lanterns, or the little 90-degree lights that you can set up and set down and have it shine on your the workstation where you're working. And have also multiple brightness levels. So you might want to think, hey, I'm going to have the 1,000 lumen lantern. But if you're in a non-permissive environment and you want to try to stay a little more low-key, it might be nice to have the 10 lumen little moonlight or a red headlamp that you can work by that's going to keep you from blasting out your night vision. So consider multiple brightness levels of lighting. We talked about the headlamps. Regular old flashlights are good. I like the most of them all are LED these days, very inexpensive, and they last a long time. Surefire makes a great light. They're super expensive. That's kind of the Gucci mode. But I've also had good experience with their return policy. I bought an expensive Surefire flashlight, and the tail cap stopped working after many years. And I sent them an email, and they just said, sent me a new one. They didn't even ask for the old one back. So I really appreciate that customer service by Surefire. But if that's a little outside of your budget, Phoenix makes a good flashlight. Also, Olight or Streamlight make very good flashlights. And I actually have a SOG light as well that's pretty cool. You can also have candles in your bug out bag. Like we talk about, having a pace plan, primary, alternate, contingency. If for some reason your flashlight stopped working, having a candle and a match or a way to start a fire is a great way to go. You could have lanterns to give yourself area lighting. I also have this product. It's called a glow tube, and it's a pretty cool little flashlight. It's waterproof to great depths, and you just push a little button on it, and it gives you a really bright glowing light. They come in many different colors, kind of fun. Also, like we talked about, red lighting will preserve your night vision or a green light. And they also make chem lights, right? And those are the little plastic ones where you break the little glass inside and shake it up, the Kyalum lights. And those are great because they don't need any batteries. They're disposable when you're done with them. So you can leave them. You could give them to somebody else for comfort and for help and not worry about getting it back. So something to think about. Number 12 on our list, food. Everybody loves to have some food. It gives you energy needed to get where you're going quick. The food should be lightweight, easy to prepare, and have a long shelf life. So remember, this is just for 3 days. And in our rule of threes, we talk about the fact that you can go 3 weeks without food. But we need energy, and we want to be not suffering through this time. So having a little food with you is important. So first off, you could get the good old standard MREs, meals ready to eat. The benefit of these, they last a long time. And you don't even need to heat any water up to have an MRE. You can eat them cold. But it is nice to have the ones with the little heater packets inside of them to warm them up. You could also carry freeze-dried backpacker meals. But just remember, you're going to have to heat up some water for these, but they are lightweight and readily accessible. You can get them at any camping store or Walmart. And so that's an option for you. And then you can even go as far as getting some of the lifeboat food. I have these little cubes, and they're just high-calorie, almost like a little shortbread cookies that are in this little pouch. And the thing, they last for years and years and years without going bad. And it's emergency calories that are going to help you survive. So that's an option for you. But even something as simple as having some power bars, granola bars, having some beef jerky, tuna fish. They make tuna in these Mylar envelopes. They're pretty lightweight, and you don't need to worry about it dealing with a can. So you can also get Spam in those foil pouches. So those are not bad options to keep in your bug out bag. And then make sure you throw in a small manual can opener, the little P38 military style ones. You never know, on the road you may find a can of food. And if you don't have a can opener, that would not be very good. All right, so food's pretty straightforward. Have some in there. Number 13, cutting tools. We want to be able to cut and process wood to help ourselves in case we need to make a fire or a shelter. So a good fixed blade knife, I think, is indispensable. You could also have a small machete, a small military-style wire saw, the commando saw, they call it, or a multi-tool can do the job. They have little saws on them as well as a knife. And then your regular everyday carry pocket knife. Most men or people are going to usually have at least one knife on them. You should have that pocket knife with you. But a good fixed blade knife comes in real handy. Next on our list, number 14, and I call this the mini survival kit. Now, you may ask yourself, hey, Brent, isn't this whole bag a survival kit? Okay, this is the mini kit. And the thing about the mini kit is it has a lot of the different options that we talked about earlier, a way to make fire, a cutting tool, maybe a small compass for navigation. So it has some of these items, but in a very small, not as easy to use form necessarily. But the beauty of this is once you start hitting the road, you and your family, you had to ditch your car, things are falling apart. You're trying to make it back to your house, or you're trying to make it to your parents' house, wherever you're going. And you take the mini survival kit and you take that out and you put that in your pocket, right? You put it in your cargo pocket or in your pants pocket. And then, God forbid, something happens and your bag gets taken from you, or you have to ditch your bag and run for your safety. Well, you have that mini survival kit in your pocket and you have at least a way to try to help yourself survive without your full bug out bag. So that's why I like to have the mini survival kit. You can put one of those little mini survival Mylar blankets in there, some paracord, a little flashlight. So mini survival kit, add that to your bug out bag. And then section 15, and these are some miscellaneous items at the end. They maybe didn't really have their own section. First off, personal protection. Firearms, not everybody is comfortable or capable to carry a firearm. Ideally, you're going to have that as part of your everyday carry. But it could be, you could have one in your bug out bag. But if you do, you absolutely need to make sure that it's secure to prevent it being stolen or being falling into the wrong hands of somebody that shouldn't have that. So maybe part of your setup for your bug out bag is you have a note on the wall that explains and reminds you other things to grab. And there's a note on the wall and it says, make sure you grab your pistol from the safe. And that will remind you before you take off and go. It'd be a good way to make sure you did it in a safe manner. You could also have non-lethal items, things like pepper spray or a collapsible baton, maybe a small baseball bat or a tire knocker type of a tool that you see the truckers use. Something that you could use to protect you and yourself, but is legal in your area. They also make taser flashlights style or stun guns, and those have more of a psychological effect. Some of them do, but it could be just enough to keep somebody from bothering you, and it would also double as a flashlight. You could also just have a walking stick, you know, similar to the karate style bow staff that they use for self-defense. Well, you could have that as your walking stick, but could also help you to keep off bad guys if they should try to give you a hard time. And other things that maybe you would have in your bug out bag, if you've got the room for them and you don't mind carrying the weight, would be a small folding shovel, maybe a mini pry bar that could help you get into an area to shelter yourself or to help rescue somebody else that's trapped. The Silcock tool is a great little device. It looks like a little cross made out of metal, and it has little bits on either side. And have you ever noticed at a public building or a school that there's no faucet handles, that you have to have a little tool in order to get water out of the faucet? Well, that's what the Silcock tool does, is it has a little square bit on there that so you could get water out of a city hall building somewhere or a fire station or a school. So that's a good tool to have. Also, you could have some survival cord, some bank line, also duct tape, zip ties, small rubber bands would come in handy. You also could have some binoculars or a laser range finder, or maybe even if you had the money, some night vision would give you quite an advantage should you trying to be stealthy. So those all dependent on your financial situation, obviously. And maybe you want to stock some barter and trade items inside your bug out bag. Have some extra cash in case the ATM machines aren't working. Maybe some small junk silver or gold. Maybe a credit card with a zero balance on it that you keep only for an emergency, and that goes in your bug out bag. And then also important to have when you're bugging out would be having a phone list and maybe something to keep your important documents in. We teach on the Project 223 about emergency document binder. And this would be a binder that you grab when you're bugging out that has all your important family personal information on that. And it would also have a USB drive in there with copies of all that information. So should you have the ability to carry that, that's good. If you had to ditch the binder and it was just too much to carry that, then you'd have to leave that in your safe and just carry the USB drive with you. And then don't forget a small Bible, some playing cards, maybe a little mini survival book, things that will help you in a dangerous and crummy situation. Well, we've hit on quite a few items, and I know that's a lot to take in, but hopefully you've gained some new nuggets, some new things that you hadn't thought about before that could help you and your family in a tough time. So excited for next time when we come back. We're going to hit the final two items in our part one, tier one, basic family and personal preparedness. So from the Eagle's Nest, signing out. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks for joining us.